evening. Hope you had as nice an afternoon as we did. But we're glad to be back with you tonight. I'm glad the rain held off as long as it did. We got to go in and see one of the state parks up here we'd not been to and really liked it. This morning we started talking about the follow-up visitation that will be required in order to lead people to Christ. After our campaign, or even during it, this coming Sunday, there will be some visitors here. And the polite thing to do is to return the favor of a visit. Folks that have worked at this for quite a while said, we need to show up at their door within no less than 3 days after they've been here, while it's still fresh on their mind. And go there. It's a very casual visit. You're not pushing for anything. You're just going there and saying, hi, we're so glad you came, and we'd love to help any way we can. If there's something that you would like for us to do, we'd be glad to do it. You can take them something. You can take them a copy of the bulletin. We'll talk about some of those kind of things. But it's just a very lighthearted kind of, hi, we're so glad you came, and hope you'll come again. What questions do you have about the church that we could help you with? Just that kind of thing. And while you're there, you'll observe some things. Afterwards, there'll be a form you can fill out, and you can suggest what these people might benefit from next. Some will benefit from a follow-up visit, and that will be done by a different group of folks. Folks will go in there prepared to, if need be, lead a Bible study or talk to them about how they become a Christian or placing membership at the congregation if they're already a member of the Lord's church and things like that. And then there'll be some other things they can do. They could be recommended that they receive a invitation to future events at the congregation, special gospel meetings or different things that's going on. There'll be a group that takes care of those kind of things, birthday cards, whatever, all those kind of things. And so you'd be able to make those recommendations in that first visit. And so on, it would go like that. And well, there are four different categories. Everybody in the church can do something and needs to. We all owe the Lord for our salvation. We owe, just like Paul's, we're in debt, and we need to help other people find Jesus. So what would you like to do? Number one would be that first-time call. It's called the red team. The ones that go back with a more specific thing in mind, such as a Bible study or Bible correspondence course or something like that, talking to them about their souls, that is the yellow team. Following that, there is the green team, and I brought one of the books. I'm hoping by next Sunday Bible class, I'll have a copy for each one of you of this, but we didn't have that many copies right now. But in the book, it will explain the green team, what they're going to be doing. They're going to be taking things to people like Power for Today. They'll be visiting move-ins or shut-ins and sending cards of encouragement. The third group, all they do is write from home. They can write a thinking of you card. They'll be writing a follow-up to special events information, birthday cards. We already collected a bunch of birthdays in our backpack giveaway, and those folks, hopefully this week, the folks that did that work, hopefully they'll get an invitation. They'll get one of these in the mail, because these were made to mail, and I don't think we made it as clear as we needed to this morning. We don't want you to have one of these. We want you to have enough to give to everybody you want to invite. And so you may want 20. Whatever you can use. Paper is cheap compared to souls. And if we don't invite them, they won't come. It's just that clear. But if we do, people will come. You cannot invite a bunch of folks and they not come. Somebody will come. You'll be surprised. Some of you think, all I have is hard-headed, old, contrary people like myself. But you'll be surprised. If you invite them, they'll come. They really will. And so this is an extra tool for that. It's set up on the social media where you can send a picture of this to your friends, your social friends. You can hand them to whoever, your boss or somebody where you work or the folks down at the grocery store or whoever it is, people you've built some kind of relationship with, invite them. You'll be surprised. Folks will come. I hope Tom invites that waitress. She may not come, but she will not forget that you invited her. And you know, God works God works long range. And things that you will think is no profit for right now, later on, that person may very well obey the gospel. I remember a Bible study, Rick, at North End that I had with a young lady, Jack Watt's wife. Do you remember her? I had a Bible study with that girl, and I thought it was going along fine. She was so sweet and nice, and all of a sudden, we'd been studying about the church and the one church and how you become a member of that one church through faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. And we talked about that, the only church that had been promised salvation. And she broke out in tears and would never would study anymore. She just realized her daddy and mom had not done those things and wasn't going to. And I thought, I've lost the study. Come back later, the woman's teaching Bible classes. After I was gone, she decided to obey the gospel. This kind of thing happens a lot. God works on a long-range basis. He'll bring somebody into someone's life, and you may come along and pick up on that, or you may plant a seed, and you don't know what happens to it, but a little later on, I had one of y'all come to me and tell about somebody that it was at their funeral that person found out that lady obeyed the gospel because of what you said to him sometime. He didn't even know that he'd had any effect at all, but said, what you said to him, they told me, is why they obeyed the gospel. You just can't believe what God can do. God uses little things, small things, broken things to do great work. He can take a rock and kill Goliath. I mean, he can just do all kinds of things. And what we need to do is not be afraid to let him use us. And so that's what those are about. Rick has shown his artwork in an amazing way. He has drawn up a chart for the reds and the blues and the greens and whatever the colors, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. And we're going to let that come around. If you've already made your mind up which group you want to be in, you can write it down. And by the way, you're not stuck with this position. If you change your mind, you can go to another group. But don't you really think you owe it to Jesus to do something? We just all do. And this business, the thing, I'm just going to church and they're lucky to have me. Hey, listen, I don't think that'll get you into heaven, frankly. I don't think it will. I think you need to serve Jesus. And so, Rick, would you mind just starting that chart? And it'll just pass around during the service. And when we have our talk back session a little bit more, we'll talk some more about some of this. Is that okay? Turn with me, if you would, please, to Luke 16. Luke chapter 16, verse 19. There was a certain rich man who was clothed with purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, dogs came and licked his sores. And so it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. For 10 years, I preached at the Norway Avenue Church of Christ in Huntington, West Virginia. It's about 6 blocks away from Marshall University, the second largest state university in the state of West Virginia. Every September, there would be families show up in that congregation with a college student. They were going to Marshall University. And these people were faithful Christians. And they wanted their children to have a chance to be a part of a congregation here while they were going to college. And they would talk to me about their child. They would introduce them. They would make suggestions about how they could be used in service. And I always promised those parents, we're going to do absolutely the best we can to help them remain faithful to the Lord and become effective servants of God. Some of them did. Some of them reached a point that they would teach and preach as among the men and many of the young ladies, Bible school teachers. But you know there was some that we never saw them again. Parents would come and introduce them to us and they'd never be back. Some of them would be challenged by atheist professors and would lose their faith. And one of the things they would say, listen, look at all the suffering in the world. If there was a good God, why in the world would he let all this suffering go on? Either there is no God, or the one that we have is bad. Well, it is hard to understand. This rich man who seems to have everything, he has the finest of clothes, clothed in purple and fine linen. That's amazing, isn't it? Purple and fine linen. That's what he's wearing. Purple was a very expensive color. Only the rich could afford it. Often it was worn by royalty. Linen, that was the clothes of the priest. This man is really up the ladder. Socially, religiously, but you know what? This man isn't right with God. Now, he may have felt right with God, but he wasn't. Outside his gate lays a beggar full of sores. Kind of like Job, full of sores. And this man is so weak, he can't even keep the dogs away from him. Come and lick his sores. And they weren't nice little poodles. They were curs. They were strays. More like what you might think of a fox or a wolf or a rat. They were not being friendly. Well, he died. Some would probably say, well, he's better off. And he was. But you know what? It said that rich man also died. I don't know how much longer he lived. Compared to eternity, it wasn't much. He also died. Now, when the beggar died, it said he was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. In those days, poor folks didn't even necessarily get a burial. They were often thrown into the Valley of Hinnom, the place where idol worship had been performed, where God's people had thrown their own babies into a fiery god as a sacrifice. The place was so desecrated they only used it for a dump later on. And when Jesus describes hell, he describes a place called Gehenna. You may have heard that term. And it was talking about the Valley of Hinnom. It became the city dump, where the fires never went out and the burns and the worms did not die. Well, whatever happened to his body, we know what happened to his soul. The angels carried him to Abraham's bosom. At last, he was at rest. At last, he was at peace. At last, he is comforted. But you know what? I don't know how long it took. I don't know how much powder and paint that rich man put on, but you know what? He died. He went to the best doctors. He did everything he could. He took all the right medicine. But you know what's going to happen sooner or later to you and to me? Now, I believe in doing all that stuff. I'm a health nut. I just eat certain things, and I don't get to eat a lot of the things I'd like to eat because I'm trying to live as long as I can. I decided when I had a heart attack about 11 years ago that if I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be able to be here and preach the gospel and take care of my families and enjoy the spring and the fall. And so I decided I'd do everything I could to stay here as long as I could. And you may not be able to tell it, but I do the best I can with what I got left and how I look. I spent a time in front of the mirror. Aren't you glad? You should have seen what I saw when I got up. And you all do that too. And I appreciate it, don't you? You know, I try to look younger than I am, but you know what? I'm going to die one day. Now, Patty has the date set. She wants to die at 120. She wants to die young as late as possible. Well, that's all right with me. Now, I had a neighbor down the road that made it to 103, but you know what happened then? He died. It's appointed unto man once to die. You're going to die. I'm going to die. That's why when I said this morning that in about 10 years, if we don't do something, the doors will have to get locked, sell the place off, because we'll all be gone. You say, oh, it'll longer than 10 years. Maybe you will. Maybe you will. I hope you do. But you know what? Sooner or later, we're going to die. And if we haven't replaced ourselves, Who's going to run this church? Who's going to be a part of this church? Well, anyway, he died. Reminds me of a story. Now, it does say he was buried. Reminds me of a story of this little town where this eccentric millionaire, you know, if you're eccentric, if you're a millionaire, you're eccentric. If you're poor, you're just crazy. This eccentric millionaire died, and he had in his will, he said, now, when I die, I want you to put me in a solid gold brand new Cadillac for my coffin. And I want you to dig a big hole, and I want you to turn the motor on, set the air conditioning on, turn on the pretty music, and I want to be lowered into that grave in my new Cadillac, and the music playing, the air conditioning going. And so all this is going on out there in the cemetery. There are a couple of drunks that were sleeping it off out there, and one of them woke up and saw all this, and he poked the other, and he says, ain't that living? No, that's not living. That's dead. I don't care how fancy it is. It's dead. You're dead. You're dead. So, on this life it seems unjust, but I want you to notice there's a great equalizer. Someone has said you can see this in three parts of a play. For part one, they're alive and they're very unequal, very unfair. Notice it even says the beggar was even laid at the rich man's gate, begging for food. We were on a campaign some years ago in Jamaica. I was down at the Race Course Road Church of Christ and Christian school that they have, that's been supported for years by brethren here in America. It's a great Christian work. And I was holding a gospel meeting and doing some other Bible study and things with folks. And we were all in a bus one day. There must have been about 13 or so of us on this little bus. And they crowd you in, just a little bus, but they crowd you in. And we were driving down the road, and there was this, you'll see mansions. Americans can go down there, and for very little money, they can live like kings. And so there'll be a mansion with a gate out front, and right next to a whole bunch. Some of those people lived in things that looked about like a chicken house. And I couldn't believe, Mom, you still remember those pretty little girls? Those little girls would come out of those houses that Mom had worked so hard on them. They'd have ruffles all over them. They were beautiful. They had curled hair, fixed just right. It looked like a picture. How in the world they lived in that squalor and came out looking so beautiful, I couldn't understand. But they'd come to church, buddy, and they'd knock your eye out. They'd look so good. But here, when we was going down the road, what I was telling you, I noticed we passed one of those gates, one of those mansions, and laying right there at the gate, there was this guy, and he was asleep, and he had one arm slung out in the lane. And I still cannot get the image of that man. Obviously, he was a beggar. He's laying there in the road. And if the driver didn't move over, he would run right over his arm. That's the way a lot of the world lives. We're starting to get some idea here in America with our street people and all that kind of stuff. But we just can't hardly believe how much of the world lives. And so here's this beggar, and here's this rich man. They're both dead. Now for Lazarus, it turned out pretty good. Here's some good news for you. It seems like he and Abraham are in a feast. In that day, you remember when Jesus was establishing the Lord's Supper, how that it mentions that John was on his breast? Well, people at that time would lay down around a low table or maybe a rug on the floor with the food on it. And think about this, Randy. This is kind of... sounds kind of fun. You just lay down there on one arm and you relax and you eat as long as you can eat. That's pretty good, isn't it? That's pretty good. Well, anyway, he's on Abraham's bosom. Now, that is the closest, most important position you could be in. So while he received no attention here, he received no care here, there, he's resting on Abraham's bosom. But then for the rich man, it doesn't turn out quite so good, does it? It says he woke up in torment. His fancy clothes are gone. Now he was once a rich man, now he is the beggar. It is Lazarus that's feasting. not him. And he lifts up his eyes. Now, wait a minute, this guy's dead. But I want you to notice how alive a dead man is. What happens after death? Well, Lazarus was feasting, and this guy is in torment in these flames. And he looks and he sees Lazarus and he recognizes Lazarus. One of the questions often asked in our Bible Answers television program that I was the mentor of for a number of years, would often get the question, we know each other in heaven. One of the best passages I can turn to is a rich man knew Lazarus, even knew his name, recognized him right off. Sees him over there. And so the rich man, he's suffering. Now he's dead. I know he's dead, but he's still alive, isn't he? He's still very, 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 very conscious. Death did not stop consciousness. This idea of sleeping, that's a metaphor. He never had a dream this bad. Lazarus never had one this good. So he lifts up his eyes and he sees all this over there and it's far off and he calls out, Father Abraham. By the way, he hadn't met Abraham before. How does he know that's Abraham? Wouldn't that be wonderful to sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Just like Jesus said, people will come from the east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom. And we could sit there and we could talk and we could ask questions about, you know, what was like Abraham when it came right down to it. Was you had to draw that knife like you were going to kill Isaac. What would you have done if God hadn't stopped your hand? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? Wouldn't it be fun to do that? Father Abraham, have mercy. All of a sudden, this guy wants mercy. How much mercy did he have for Lazarus? Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus. Here he is. He thinks Lazarus is his slave or something. Send Lazarus to dip his finger in water and come and cool my tongue, for I'm in anguish. And he wants water. Listen, right here, we got water. We got water. You know, Jesus says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. We've got enough water in here tonight that your sins could all be washed away and you could be like Lazarus. You could go be in Abraham's bosom. If you want to. You know how much water is on the other side? Zero. Right now you can have mercy. You can have mercy tonight. Jesus' mercy is demonstrated in his death on the cross, in the forgiveness that he offers, even in his prayer, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. You can have mercy now. Do you know how much mercy is over there?
None.
Now is the accepted time. Today is the day of salvation. That's why talking to our friends about their soul is so important. That's why being a part of this visitation effort and we should reach out to people, why it's so important that I get involved and I give of myself. And when I go before Jesus, he can say, well done, good and faithful servant. Well, if I don't do anything? Well, he's got something for that too. Remember the one talent man? He calls him wicked, lazy. He says, cast him into outer darkness where there'll be sickness, weakness, and sickness. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. There, I got ahead of myself. I'm trying to hurry a little bit too much here. He said, then he thinks about it and he says, send Lazarus over here to dip his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I'm in anguish and pain. As if one drop of water on his tongue would be all that important to him. But it was. That's how much agony he is in. And then Abraham says to him, son, remember. You mean he can see, he can hear, he can communicate, and he can remember. He's not very much asleep, is he? Remember, in thy life, thou received good things, and Lazarus evil. But now he is blessed, and you are tormented. And besides all this, there's a great gulf fixed between me and you, and those that would cross over. By the way, this word gulf, in the original language, the word chasma, which means chasm. There's a great chasm between the two. And those who would cross from here to there cannot, and neither can they come from there to here. Now, who fixed the chasm? The word in the original is, it means, it's in the tense of, in the verb, that it means it is a continuing fixed state. It was fixed back there, and it's fixed right here, and it's going to be fixed all the way into eternity. In life today, there's a difference between the sheep and the goats. Jesus said when he comes back, he can separate them just like a shepherd would separate sheep from goats. And that's the reason, Jesus came and died on the cross to help us get across the chasm. Because we're all lost, because we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. And the only way across the chasm is through Christ. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Which side of the chasm are you on tonight? Which side of the chasm are your children on tonight? Your friends, your family, your closest friend. Which side of the chasm? Do you see what we're doing, why it's so important? It's not that we are doing it and made it important. Jesus died and made it important. And any little thing I can do to try to help someone across that chasm, I want to do it. Don't you? There's a great gulf fixed. None can pass from here to there, nor from there to here. Right now, while we are still living, is the only time we can cross the chasm. There's no second chances. That's what the book says. It's now or never. Now is the accepted time. Today is the day of salvation. That's the way Paul puts it. All of a sudden, he does remember. Sometimes folks ask, well, the other question is often was on the program, is, are there degrees of punishment in hell? Well, I'll tell you what, I don't want the lightest layer of hell. How about you? I burned my arm the other day. I decided I didn't want any more of that. How about you? I don't want the coolest place in hell. But I'll tell you what. Remember the opportunities that I had when I could have obeyed the Lord and didn't? That will make my punishment worse. I will hate myself more because I could have obeyed. And I didn't. All of a sudden, this guy gets to thinking. He says, I have five brethren. Would you send Lazarus back and warn them lest they come to this place of torment? I want to talk with you very plainly right here, right now. Some folks think they don't want to dishonor their parents by doing something the Bible says for them to do because their parents didn't do it. I was in a Bible study, Rick. I guess if I called the name, you'd know who the family was. With a great, great guy there in Parkersburg. Wonderful man. His wife was a faithful Christian, taught Bible class also. Daughter did also. Son, later his son would become an elder in the church. Good boy. This man was not a Christian. Good man. But he did not obey the gospel. He agreed to study the Bible with me, and we were sitting there, we were studying the Bible, we were studying about the seriousness of eternity and where what it would take to be saved, and I heard a sound I hadn't heard before. I heard, and I realized tears were running out of his eyes, running off his cheek, and hitting his Bible. But he didn't obey the gospel. Later, his wife told me his mother died of another faith, and she was never immersed for her sins, forgiveness. And so he thought he would dishonor his mother if he was baptized. Oh, what a shame. What a shame. How he needs to hear with this rich man. Listen, he found out the way he went took him to hell. And he didn't want a single one of his loved ones to... If your loved one is in hell tonight, I can't say he is. I want God to save everybody. I'd like to be a universalist preacher. I just can't see it in the book. But if your loved ones are in hell, they want you to be baptized more than the preacher does, the elder does, the deacon does, than anyone else does. They want you to obey the gospel. Do you want your kids to hurt and suffer like you have? Of course you don't. Of course you don't. If you love them. Isn't that something? There's more evangelistic spirit in hell than there is right here tonight. They know how serious this is. They know how wrong they've been, and they don't ever want anybody else to make this same mistake. You see what we're about through this spring, why it's so important? Oh my. How many of those things do you want to mail out? We'll get more. How many stars cards do you want tonight? They're here. I've got them here tonight, and we'll get more. Why don't you just do everything you can for Jesus and see what he does about it? What if you actually got excited and thought, you know what? This is the most important thing in the world. I believe it is. What do you think? We have an invitation song. We'll have a talkback session a little later, and we'll talk more about the visitation program and how it works, and how you can be such a major role in the saving of souls. And I hear Jesus say, well done one day. But right now, what about your own life and your own soul? Is there anything, I know so many of you folks here, and I know you so well. I think many of you are very, very deeply committed to Jesus yourself right now and serving him. But if there's anything that we can help you with, if there's something we need to pray about together, if you need to be baptized, if you need the prayers of the church, if you're struggling with something in your life, please come while together we stand to sing.